Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pointing to the bee, she said, "This one is your life now." Next, she pointed at the frog. "The frog is the life Graham 2 is living, though Graham 3, famous comedian with the mohawk life." She stopped talking and looked over to see if he fully grasped what she was saying. He didn't move or speak, but his eyes were riveted to her face. "The hawk is Graham 3, the life you would be living if you'd stayed with Ruth, married her, and had children together." She pointed to the lion, "and the king of the jungle, there, is your future, the life you'll live after you decide which of these three you want forever."
That's Jonathan Carroll reading an excerpt from his latest novel, Mr. Breakfast. Chances are that you might not have heard of Jonathan Carroll. If not, then today is your lucky day. Neil Gaiman describes Mr. Breakfast as a beautiful, brilliant meditation on art, love, inspiration, and what makes life worthwhile. The book is about a failing comedian named Graham Patterson. On a cross-country drive, he decides to get a tattoo. The artist not only gives him a one-of-a-kind tattoo, she also gives him a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The tattoo artist tells Graham that his lost soul can jump between three different universes. Through these experiences, he will find some combination of love, fame, and fatherhood. Jonathan gives us insight into what it would be like to live a different life.
I have always been fascinated with the life not lived, whether in real life or in literature. I just think, you know, there's so many wonderful versions of it, from Borges to the film Sliding Doors and others. It's just, I think it's one of the universal questions that we ask, you know, along the lines of, why am I here, or is there a God? The question is, what would my life be like if I had gone left instead of right? Or I'd taken that job, or I hadn't taken that job. Those possibilities that you had in life that you chose to go in one direction rather than the other. And, you know, the Robert Frost poem, The Road Not Taken.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that in Jorge Luis Borges' short story, The Garden of Forking Paths, and the movie Sliding Doors. And you've cited these two works as influences. Can you talk a bit about how they influenced Mr. Breakfast?
Well, I don't think that it is an understatement, but I don't think that it's an easy question to answer. One of the things that the Borges story basically points out is that if you choose to go in one direction, there are going to be things that you were completely unexpected. I'll give you an example from my own life. When I was young, I really, really wanted to be a writer and hopefully famous. And in one country I went to do a book promotion where my books sell well, I had an appointment to do a book signing. This was my dream come true. I always wanted to be a well-known writer, blah, blah. And I was going to this event where lots of people were going to come. And as I was walking to the event, there was a line in the store, out of the store, around the corner, around the block. And I turned to the people who were with me and I said, "What's going on? Who's that?" And they said, "That's for you." And I had the first panic attack of my life. I walked into the building, said to them, "I have to go to the bathroom." They said, "Well, no, you have to start." I said, "I've got to go to the bathroom." So they took me to the bathroom. I went into a stall, sat down on it, and held my head in my hands going, "You can do this. You can do it. Just be cool." And I went down and I did it, but it really was everything that I'd ever wanted. "Oh, yeah? Well, you don't want this, and you didn't expect it." And I think that this is so true with people. You know, I want to be famous. I want to be successful. I want to marry Susie. All these things. And, you know, that old saying, be careful what you ask for, because you'll get it, but it won't be the version that you dreamed about having.
Mm-hmm. The protagonist in Mr. Breakfast is a failing comedian named Graham Patterson. He has a life-changing experience when he meets a tattoo artist named Anna in North Carolina. What happens?
he goes to this tattoo parlor because his car is broken down. It's a complete spontaneous thing. He walks by the store, and in the window are these incredible renderings of the tattoos that are done at the store, and he had never seen anything like it. So just on a whim, he walks in and becomes fascinated by the whole possibility. And it's very much unlike the old guy, the old Graham, who's kind of lost in his life at this point. And he has the tattoo artist. She shows him a book of her tattoos, and he chooses one. And it turns out that it's very magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very magical indeed. Can you tell us how it is magical? What magical properties the tattoo has?
It allows him to see the three lives that he could live at this moment. The one that he's living, the one where his dream comes true, and I won't go into it more than that. And the third one is a kind of domestic life in which, you know, family and children and all this stuff. And the tattoo artist, who is the bringer of the magic, says, you can watch this, but you can't participate in it. So basically, he can observe these three lives, and then he has three chances to go back to each of them. He has to go check in, check out. And then at the end of those three chances, or even earlier, he has to choose. And then after he chooses, then his memory will be wiped of this experience, and he'll just be Graham Patterson living in a normal life.
Mm-hmm. It's a very intriguing premise, and you write about it and execute it so well. I'm curious, if you were faced with this situation of being able to choose these alternative lives, what would you decide to do?
Frankly, I don't know. My wife asked me the other day, she said, if you couldn't be a writer, what would you be? And I said, a musician. And she looked at me like, I've been married 50 years. And she looked at me like she'd never seen this guy before. She said, a musician? And I said, yeah, I'd like to be one of those guys who's like a piano bar player, and, you know, or I can just walk in and start to play with whatever group is up there. And she said, I have never in all of my life with you thought that you would want that as your alternative. So there you go.
Yeah. You said that you know you can start a book when you have the title or the first sentence. Was that the case with Mr. Breakfast?
Yep, it was. And what's funny is that I looked the other day to see if there are any book reviews of Mr. Breakfast online. I realized that besides my own book and book title, there are like 400 restaurants named Mr. Breakfast in America. I thought that I was being really original when I came up with the title.
I thought so too.
I'm way behind the line.
I thought so too. Yeah. So which came first, the title or the first sentence?
I came up with the title and I came up with the idea of it. I said, how do I start this? Do I start it at the beginning? Do I start it at the end? You know, what do I give away from the beginning? And a lot of the time, people who read my books enjoy the first sentence because it's usually so off the wall. But with this, the first sentence is, do you want to talk about Patterson? It's like we come in the middle of the conversation. Who's asking this? Who's he asking it of, et cetera, et cetera, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's like, you know, to come in the middle of a conversation, it's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, and that worked that way, as the Greeks said, in medias res, right? In the middle of things, yeah. Do you have a favorite opening line from one of your books?
Yeah, my favorite opening line is Wooden Sea. It says, never buy yellow clothes or cheap leather. and it's funny because that line came from, I was in a Viennese cafe one day, sitting and daydreaming and looking out the window. And this guy walked by in this really cheap-looking yellow jacket. And I said, never buy yellow clothes or cheap leather. It just, and I went, oh, I like that. And I wrote it down. That's how it came to life.
Right. So obviously, it is important to you how you start a book, hey, that you come up with a first sentence that you're intrigued with and you think the reader will be intrigued by. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Well, I'm a reader too, you know, and I read, you know, just everything. And the thing is that I think that it's doing the reader a disservice if you don't engage them early. You know, it can be a thriller, it can be Tolstoy, it doesn't make any difference. If it takes you 30 pages to get to something, who's going to put up with 30 pages? Life's too short. Mm-hmm. And so, whether it be a bouncy catch-all line or hopefully something a little bit more important, you owe the reader that. Get them engaged quickly. They may disengage soon after, but at least I got them hopefully from the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, I think with all of your books, I think once you've got them from the beginning and they stay through to the middle and the end. I know that's been the case for me. I think that one of the most profound passages in Mr. Breakfast is this one. I just want to run it by you and see what you think. We all live in our past sometimes. Our memories become our present. Any life is a past, present, and future, not just a series of right nows. I think this idea is really an important part of what makes Mr. Breakfast such a beautiful book. Can you talk about this idea?
I think that too often we live in our past or in our future and forget that we're, they ain't happening, but your now is. And I think that it causes a lot of problems and a lot of heartache because, if you live in your future, right now is unimportant because tomorrow the good stuff happens. If you live in your past, the bad stuff kind of carries you like a dark cloud over you into the present. So, if you're still hating that lover from 20 years ago, that has an effect on right now and a big effect. It means that you're kind of preoccupied with something you can do nothing to fix. It is fixed. There it is. That happened. And whereas the future is an abstract. So, why play with something that's abstract when there's the concrete right now?
Very well said. And I get the sense from listening to you that you don't have a problem living in the present. Would that be fair to say?
Well, for many years I was a teacher and I wanted to be a writer. And so basically I lived two lives. And when you live more than one life, I would teach all day and then I'd come home, take an hour or so off, and then write until, 1 o'clock in the morning. I realized that you can get more done in a day if you believe that there's a time for it. People have said to me so often, if I had the time, I'd write a book. And I said, you do have the time. It's just a question of how important is writing a book to you. To me, it was very important. My now was teach for part of the day and write for part of the day, and I stuck to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that the ending of Mr. Breakfast made you cry. Is that something that happens often when you're writing the endings of your novels?
No. It doesn't. I think it happened once before when at the end of the book, one of my characters died. You get really attached to them. It's ridiculous to say that because it's just words on a page, but you spent so much time living with these people and thinking for them and knowing that they were going into a dark place or that they were going to be safe, that after a while, there's kind of an ectoplasmic real them in your life. And so I didn't really know for a long time how I wanted to end it. But when the ending came, I went, oh, no. And that's the ending that it has now.
Yeah, lucky for us. Dogs are recurring characters in your work. You have a very powerful scene involving a dog in Mr. Breakfast. Can you tell us about that scene?
I always say that dogs are minor angels. They're your best friend. They'll eat pizza with you at 4 o'clock in the morning. You step on them, they forgive you instantly. And so it's kind of a hobby horse for me to put it in almost all of my books in one form or another. And I'd rather not say what's up with Mr. Breakfast because I think that's one of the fun surprises. But it's also a kind of how humans react with dogs on a more profound level than, come here, Spot, let me scratch your head.
Yeah. And also many of the dogs are talking dogs.
Yeah. I remember the first time I ever had a talking dog was when I was writing Land of Laughs, and I very distinctly remember when I got to the point in the book where the dog talked, I kind of froze because it came out of nowhere. I said out loud, the dog just talked. Okay, why? And it just moved. I just kept going on. It was like, the supernatural never happened sort of thing, but it was no obstruction. It was just like, wow, the dog just started. Now what do we do? Where do we go? Et cetera.
Yeah. Author Joe Hill, who we've had on our show, has compared your work to Haruki Murakami, Brian Eno, and David Lynch. Joe says that your work is so fresh, weird, and original. It stands in a class of its own. For nearly 50 years now, how are you able to keep writing such fresh, weird, and original work?
C.S. Lewis had a great line. He said, write the kind of books that you would like to read. And so far, I felt that excitement. Oh, I got a great idea. It's something that I would like to read. If I can pull it off the way that I want to, it'll really be the kind of book that I enjoy. It's the same thing as reading, you know, Joe Hill or reading Neil Gaiman or somebody else who lives in some sort of other world, a world of wishes and dreams and fantasy. If the excitement is still there and the idea comes to me, then I can go and I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Carroll, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Mr. Breakfast and all of your other great books. It's been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Jonathan Carroll is the author of Mr. Breakfast. Find out more about Jonathan and his books at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Stephen Wright, Guinevere Turner, and Jonathan Carroll.
They have a lot of zany stuff on this program, don't you think?
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I don't think anyone presents themselves to me the way that they really are.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I keep having this reoccurring dream that I'm captain of a ship in a bottle.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Well, I spent the afternoon trying to daydream, but my mind kept wandering.